Meeting of Senate Transportation to Order, April 15th, 2014, at 1:33. Staff for Senate Transportation Committee, Dana Owen. Thanks, Dana. Secretary today, Ann Krickelberg, and teleconference operator is Thatcher Brower. And we thank staff for coming here. With me today, Senator Bishop, Senator Faircloth, and today only just information only, a presentation on an update to the Alaska Marine Highway status on the new ferries, dayboat Alaska class ferries, and the replacement of the Tustamina. Commissioner Kemp, welcome to the committee, and if you can introduce your staff.
Thank you, Senator. And for the record, my name is Pat Kemp. I'm Commissioner of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And today we have Ruben Yost, Deputy Commissioner, Marine Highways, and Captain John Falvey's on the line, and we'll give you an update on the newer vessel program.
Okay, for the record, Ruben Yost, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. Starting with the Alaska Class Ferry day boat. First, I have 20 slides. I will try to move pretty quickly through the introductory slides because they're a recapture of things we've already discussed last year. So the vessel mission requirements have not changed. We're looking for a vessel that will accommodate 53 vehicles and 300 passengers, and we arrived at that number based on handling 95% of the summer demand days in Lynn Canal. The speed, you see a schedule speed of 15.5 knots. That's what's required to be able to get to Haines, unload, reload, and get back within 12 hours so that we can operate with a single crew. Vessel will be single-ended. In other words, it'll have a bow and a stern, but with drive-through unloading of the bow. Again, the proposed routes for the vessel have not changed. The highest priority is to be used in Lynn Canal. Second priority is some short existing AMHS routes that could also be serviced from Juneau, such as Gustavus, Hoonah, and Tenneke. And a third priority is that the boats be able to accommodate the different Juneau access routes should one of them be constructed. The vessel will be designed so that it can work at all terminals. However, we do anticipate that we would modify Haines so that we have an end berth there so that we could unload. Load in the stern in Juneau and load and unload out of the bow in Haines. Last year there was quite a bit of discussion and controversy over whether we would have a closed aft deck versus an open deck, and after taking input from the public and looking at the cost savings versus the potential impacts, we determined the car deck will be completely enclosed. Another major decision we had to make was with regard to bow loading, how we were going to handle that, whether we would have a single door that opens, it's called a knight's hood bow, which opens, swings up, or whether we would have side loading, side stowing opening doors. In the next few slides, I'll show you, this is the Grand Manan Adventure. It was built in Florida in 2011. It's currently operating in New Brunswick in the Bay of Fundy. Has similar tide conditions and some severe weather conditions. The important thing I wanted you to notice from this slide is that when these bow doors are shut, they are completely smooth with the hull. There is no edge or lip for ice to form on, and also because of the style of the door, water pressure holds the door shut rather than trying to force the door open. This slide shows the doors as they start to open. You can see they open to the sides so they don't swing up and block anybody's view from either the bow or from the bridge. Once the outer doors are open, there's a completely watertight inner door, so it's a fail-safe system that if something should go wrong with the outer doors, the inner door keeps water off of the car deck. That inner door folds down to become a ramp to connect the car deck to the terminal. This just gives you a notion of the size of the doors and the steel arm that operates the doors. You can see that the arm is about 6 feet tall. That's a 6 foot tall person kneeling underneath of it. I also wanted you to take note that just to the right in that picture, you can see one of the door locking mechanisms. There's three of them, the one next to the person kneeling there and then two above. This is another fail-safe system. In addition to the big hydraulic arm, which opens and closes the door, there are three independently operated hydraulic hook and eyes. On the left door, there is the hook that comes down and latches against the iPad on the other door, so that in addition to water pressure holding the door shut and the hydraulic control of the arm, there are three of these extra latch mechanisms. All right, the other major design decision and consideration that we had was seakeeping. We heard a lot about the LeConte being too small for Lynn Canal in terms of being able to handle the winter weather. So we determined that we needed to be longer than the LeConte. We needed to eliminate the forward guard sponsons, which were responsible for a lot of pounding and a lot of spray. We also wanted to shelter life-saving equipment from ice accumulation by having them inside the line of the vessel rather than hanging from davits exposed to freezing conditions. So the current design that we intend to build is 280 feet. That's 45 feet longer than the LeConte. But we also then did some analysis to show, to determine whether or not the vessel would be able to deal with the conditions in Lynn Canal. That was a two-step process. The first was to document and study the wind and wave conditions in Lynn Canal using historical information. Then we looked at a series of hull lengths from the LeConte, which we believed was too small, and the Taku, which most people indicated was not a problem. And then we actually analyzed that data against a motion sickness index. And this is sort of the standard that's used for determining whether or not a vessel will cause discomfort to too many people. And it basically says that if 10% of the people get sick on a two-hour of your worst part of the voyage, people are not going to want to ride that boat. I mean, some people get seasick just looking at boats. Some people, nothing makes them seasick. So 10% is the standard. But we also then wanted to confirm those calculations by actually testing the model. So they went to Norway. This is approximately 15 and a half feet wooden model that's exact shape of the hull. It's weighted so that it has the same motion characteristics, and then they run it against waves in the wave tank. They do that with a bare hull, and then they do that with the bulbous bow. You can see in the model there's a bulbous bow to see if the bulbous bow provides the efficiency that we're looking for. Then they also look at how well it maneuvers and how much motion it has at different parts of the vessel.
Senator Bishop.
Isn't that facility like the benchmark for testing?
I believe so. There is a wave tank test place in the United States, but we weren't able to schedule it, so we went to Norway for that. So the Europeans have been doing these kind of tests for quite some time.
Thank you.
This slide has a lot going on in it, and I will try to put it into perspective. It's looking at motion sickness as a function of how long a vessel is, but also where a person is located on the vessel. And on the left axis, you see vertical acceleration. It turns out that 10% of people will get seasick if they're experiencing a little less than half a G. In other words, if the force of going up and down is greater than 4/10 of 1 G, they'll start feeling discomfort. Then they plotted known vessel lengths. You have the LeConte is the red line. Its solid red line is its computed. Its dashed line is its actual measured. Then you have the Taku is the green line. And in between are various length potential vessels. And you can see that the belly of the line is right around amidship. That is the most comfortable place to be on a vessel. The worst place to be is on the bow. The stern is a little better than the bow. So what they did then, after computing for this 280-foot length vessel, they actually monitored the motions for the 95% worst conditions, worst month. So the worst month is January. 95% of the conditions are not exceeded by this wave height, and they analyzed it for 2 hours of having that wave height occurring every 6.3 seconds. What you see is that the stern tested out almost exactly as predicted. Amidships and slightly ahead of amidships tested better than expected, whereas right on the, up close to the bow, it actually was a little worse than predicted. The way we're going to address this data is we are going to have two passenger decks and try to concentrate passenger facilities closer to the midships. On the LeConte, you only have one level of passenger facilities, so most people are forced to be in the observation lounge, which, if you look at this graph, is the worst place you want to be during bad weather. This just gives you some comparison of how the vessel shapes up in terms of dimensions compared to the Lakani. And the main thing I'd like you to notice here is that in addition to being 45 feet longer, it's also 10 feet beamier. Its draft is a little bit less. That's because it's a hard chine vessel rather than a rounded chine vessel. But by computer analysis and by wave tank testing, that turns out to be a better hull shape. It'll handle 19 more vehicles, and it will have 6,000 horsepower, 2,000-3,000 horsepower engines as opposed to 4,300. And by virtue of its greater length and horsepower, it has knot-and-a-half greater speed. And for comparison, the Testamina, which travels in the open ocean out the chain, is only 16 feet longer than this vessel we anticipate. So this is a current design profile of the vessel. You can see we have two passenger decks. The forward observation lounge is actually on the second deck, so you have a much better view from there. Then I'm going to show you a few features of the vessel design. The important thing to notice on this drawing, it's a cutaway of the car deck, is that we don't have an interior casing. The casings are on the outside of the vessel, which means when you're walking on the vessel and you want to get to an elevator or a set of stairs, you don't have to cross vehicle traffic to get to the elevator in the center of the vessel. On the left-hand side, the port side of this drawing, you can see there's a 3-foot clear space. That's the passenger walk space, so passengers can be walking down the ramp, walking on the vessel to the elevator or stairs without having to cross any vehicle that's loaded, so we can load passengers and vehicles at the same time. This shows the lower deck. The forward area will have a family area, which has both tables to work at but also play area for children, and then a insulated sound wall between that area and the library area, which has both booths and some individual tables for people to work at. Amidships will be the food service and dining area. It's kind of a horseshoe dining facility in terms of the cafeteria space, similar to the Fast Ferry. And then we have seating arrangements for individuals.
But there's an actual food service, though, right?
There will be, similar to the fast ferries, there will be soup, noodles, hot dogs, hamburgers, drinks, that kind of thing. So, but anyway, we have seating for individuals. We have tables for two and then tables for four, as well as handicap accessible tables.
And there will be Wi-Fi in the library and family area? Or
Wi-Fi we're still looking into. Okay, on the upper deck, this is the forward observation lounge. We've arranged seating so that people have a good view forward as well as to the side. Then we have tables arranged along the center, and that's a half-height wall that separates those tables. That's so that we can get outlets to every one of those tables. One of the things we heard from the public is we need a lot more outlets for people to be able to use their laptops, their games, whatever. So. Then amidships, you see on the upper deck, we have a group lounge rather than the theater. We heard from a lot of folks that it would be nice to have an area where a school group, the entire group, could be in a quiet area. So we have booths for them to work at, tables, as well as a large table that they can work around. All right, this is where we're at in the schedule. We completed the design plans in February. We are currently working on the specifications for the contract. The other thing that's going on right now is the commissioner and I met with top executives of Alaska Vigor to work out some of the details of a construction manager general contractor. It's the
and just for information, that's the Ketchikan Shipyard.
That's correct, yes. I believe they've taken that name because they're also right in the process of purchasing Seward. But at any rate, there are a lot of details to work out. This will be the first vessel ever constructed in the United States under a CMGC process. So next week we have design and contract teams that will be working and trying to develop contract language so everybody understands exactly what's covered by each line item, and also reconciling the different estimates so that we can see where our design team had made assumptions, where the shipyard had made assumptions, and making sure that the specifications accurately capture all the assumptions, so we're both talking about the same item. So next month we will begin negotiations line item by line item for the price of the vessel, and we hope to award a shipyard contract in June. If we were to need to advertise, we would advertise toward the end of the May, and then because of the advertising length, we would probably be awarding a ship contract in July. But at this point, we're very optimistic and hopeful that both these vessels will be built in Ketchikan. So, and the last two items show the target delivery for each vessel, although that also is subject to negotiations because time is money, and we want to avoid as much overtime as we can because overtime obviously will drive up the cost of the vessel. And we realize that they're going to be working on this vessel in and around working on our overhaul of vessels during the winter. And I think that's it for this. Bill.
So that 125, is that enough?
120 was our starting budget.
Right.
We believe we can construct the vessel for that amount. The actual amount after the
vessel or vessels?
Vessels. But I just want to point out that was the original appropriation was $120 million. $3 million was used design of the 350-foot vessel. We have spent an additional $3 million converting that design and developing this design. So that leaves $114 or roughly $57 per vessel. The first vessel will be more than the second vessel because there'll be layout and lofting that won't be required for the second vessel. So, but the price combined for the two be about $114, and that includes construction engineering as well as ICAP, our indirect cost recovery program. So,
and negotiations, you think with Vigor will be, they're working well, and it'll be CMCG, right?
Right. That's our goal, is to have the a CMGC contract whereby we're only dealing with one shipyard, and they've been contributing to the design as we developed it. Now we need to do that with the specifications so that what we're speccing out is what they intend to build. So.
I've never heard of lifeboats or safety features inside the vessel.
I'll go back to that slide, Senator, and perhaps that'll help. If you look just after the stack, you can see a lifeboat there. So it's in an opening. It's not completely enclosed. I believe it would be possible to let down a tarp or awning if you really had a problem with spray. But the idea is they're inside the line of the hull, so they're not right now on the Connie, for instance. They're out on the deck, exposed. Mm-hmm. So this way, most of the spray will stay off of them. So.
And you didn't bring it up, but I'm assuming that even with this final design, the decks or the car decks are still enclosed.
Yes. So if there are any other questions, I'll move to the Testamina replacement. Okay, we just recently released a reconnaissance report for the Testamina replacement, and the information I'm going to be providing to you now comes from that.
Hold on, I do have a question.
Sure.
That I forgot to ask. So with these ships, will they be... I guess SOLAS approved or whatever to cross the Dixon entrance in case there's a mechanical on one of the mainliners and that one of these ships has to take over?
No, they are not being designed to SOLAS requirements because that would increase the cost of the vessel. However, we are in the process of investigating a SOLAS waiver for the Malaspina and the Columbia because we believe those boats are more than adequate for the task of going to Prince Rupert because actually they travel the exact same waters. They just don't make that right-hand turn, the easterly turn to go into Prince Rupert. But as far as where the rough weather is, Dixon Entrance, Queen Charlotte Sound, they're already crossing those waters.
So these ships, right now, when constructed, could at least go as far south as Ketchikan?
Correct.
Sorry, now start with Testamina.
Okay, well now I have to, I'll get back to where.
Sorry.
That's fine. All right, so as I start to say, this comes from the reconnaissance report that we released last month. It is on the website. We're currently asking for people to comment on it. And when we get toward the end of the presentation, I'll tell you about the public involvement that we have and the public meetings we're going to have on this. As I mentioned earlier, for the ACF, the existing Testamina is 296 feet. Because of the weather conditions it experiences and because of the the full both car deck and staterooms that we see in the summer. We're looking for a replacement vessel that's a little bit longer. However, that length needs to be constrained by the length of the and the turning basin of the terminals and ports that we access. So we believe we can produce a vessel that's approximately 30 feet longer and still get into every community that the Tustee currently accesses. A little bit more beam as well, 9 additional feet of beam and a little bit more depth. This is an ocean-going vessel. We want to handle a few more passengers, additional vehicles, and additional staterooms. We want to have the capacity to have more crew on, but we want the vessel to be designed so that it doesn't require more crew. For instance, we might have a larger crew in the summer when we know the staterooms are going to be full, and then when the vessel is used in the winter, when it's primarily providing service to Kodiak Island from Homer, we have a lot less stateroom use, and we wouldn't have the need for as large a crew. Vehicle capacity would go from 36 vehicles to 52 vehicles, and the van capacity, although we're listing that still is 12, it would be able to accommodate 12 40-foot vans rather than 20-foot vans. The length of the van we can accommodate is determined by the size of the elevator and the turntable for the elevator. By having a slightly beamier ship, we can have a wider turntable for the elevator, and we can load larger vans. And that will also speed up loading time, because for a larger van right now, it has to be pulled onto the turntable, the cab uncouples, the van goes down, gets yanked off. So you have to have sent a tractor down first. It's a pretty cumbersome process. And you'll notice we just announced that the Kennecott was late leaving Kodiak because we had a large load, and it took us 7 hours to load. It's a cumbersome process. So a bigger turntable means we can load more small vehicles at one time and larger vans.
So you don't have to, or you won't have to reconfigure the terminals then?
Correct.
For the replacement?
Correct. We are looking at putting a forward starboard door, similar to the Kennecott, so that when the vessel comes to Auk Bay, for instance, we wouldn't have to use the elevator, but also so that as we develop some floating docks in the more high-volume ports, say Homer and Kodiak, we'd be able to unload quickly the way we do now. In other words, just drive off, not have to use the elevator. So since this vessel is going to be around for 50 or 60 years, we want to have the capacity to upgrade terminals and not have to change the vessel. All right, the only other thing I would point out here is that we'd have, by having a little bit longer length, we can get a little bit greater hull speed, and that'll help us out on that on the run too, because we're really constrained in terms of getting to every port on the chain run and making it back in a week, so that when the Kennecott is headed south, we can actually provide nonstop service between Kodiak and Homer.
And we're joined by Senator French.
One of the things that the steering committee recommended is that we not have a bar, that we have a cafeteria, a larger cafeteria with a horseshoe-shaped galley. We would serve beer and wine in the cafeteria, but this would better utilize the space on the ship, but also eliminate the need for a sole-purpose bartender. And that's one of the things we expect to hear from the public about when we have public meetings about this. We also want to take advantage of the concept we developed for the Alaska Class Ferry, and that is put the forward observation lounge one deck higher so that people have a much better view. I mentioned that we're looking at a forward starboard door so that it will work with floating ramp terminals. The other thing we want to do is take advantage of the space. You know, we have to have a pretty high deck above the car deck so that we can handle vans, but those vans only go in the center lane, so we can have a mezzanine deck probably for crew quarters that takes advantage of some of that ceiling height where we don't need it for passenger vehicles. A big issue we're struggling with is...
So you're saying you can get that many 40-footers just in the center?
I'd have to check on that, whether they all can be in the center. Maybe if we go back, I can... vehicle capacity. We have lane feet, 1,100 lane feet. I believe so, but I will check on that and confirm it for you.
It's curious.
We've been asked to look at liquefied natural gas as a fuel source for this vessel, and since we have LNG to Homer, that is a possibility. The problem is that the Coast Guard has yet to permit a passenger vessel to have fuel tanks below deck. In Europe, they routinely have LNG tanks below deck. If you have to put those decks, if you have to put those tanks above deck, you have a massive destabilizing weight problem for a vessel that's going to run in the open ocean. There are vessels that are being converted, like, say, Staten Island vessels, but they're running inside, you know, New York Harbor, where they don't have to deal with ocean conditions. So that'll take some time to work through with the Coast Guard until we get a definitive answer whether we could actually do that. But we have some time because the we don't anticipate finalizing design until the end of next year. So, but we would definitely make a fuel savings.
Deputy Commissioner, how much money is currently available?
$40 million as of last year. There's $5 million proposed in the current capital budget to be added to the vessel replacement fund.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, does that finish the job? Is that what you need to finish everything?
Oh no. The estimated cost of the recon report is in the neighborhood of $225 to $245 million. So this will be a fairly expensive vessel to replace. It's ocean going. It has cabins, full cafeteria. So, however, number I mentioned does not include the $10 million we have already had approved for design. So, and I'll talk about that in just a second. Okay, I mentioned we just released the reconnaissance report. We're taking public comment on that, and we'll be having public meetings in May. Although we have funded design completely with state money, with the anticipation that this vessel might be completed, might be constructed in Ketchikan under the CMGC process, we are leaving open the possibility of using federal aid, and therefore we are following all the federal aid rules, both for the procurement and for the design. So we will do a federal environmental document for the vessel after we take public comment on the reconnaissance report. After that, we'll do a design study report, and that's where it lays out the more detailed features of the design, and we'll have a better cost estimate. But the reconnaissance report has in it a rough cost estimate, parametric estimate, in other words, based upon the size of the vessel. And the recon report lists that as between $227 and $241 million. Now, I'll go to the next slide. I'll go pretty quickly over this. This is what we would have a year from now, and I'll show you the schedule in a minute. But plan specification and estimates means we have developed the plans far enough along that we can either have a cost estimate and detailed cost proposal from a CMGC shipyard, or we could put it out to bid. Basically, we would have everything from the arrangement and profiles, the structural plans, the all the equipment we'd like to have on the boat, an estimate of the steel that would go into it, and of course, an overall cost estimate. So we started this project, selected a design team in November. In December, they visited all the terminals to look at the terminals that the vessel would have to accommodate. Reconnaissance report released in late February. Public participation this month, and in May we'll have public meetings. I believe in Dutch Harbor on the 19th, the 21st in Homer, and I think the 22nd in Kodiak. And we plan on having each one of those be a hub for a teleconference. So when we have the public open house and meeting in Dutch Harbor, we'll have teleconferences set up in each one of the communities out the chain, from Chicnic out to Dutch. When we have a meeting in Kodiak, we'll have teleconferenced in all the Kodiak communities of Old Harbor, Port Lyons, Uzinki. And then in Homer, we'll have Saldovia teleconferenced in. So you see the design study report in September 14, final design completion in June of 2015. Our thinking on schedule would be that if we were going to do the CMGC, the Alaska-class vessels would be completed sometime toward the end of 2017. So that would be the time to start this vessel. It could be started sooner. We'll have the design completed in a little over a year, but that'll be funding dependent. And last of all, it's pretty early in the process, but this is a conceptual drawing of what the replacement vessel might look like. You can see the second deck off of the main deck where the bulwarks are. That would be the observation lounge, and then the bridge would be just above that. This is a ocean-going vessel, so it has lifeboats rather than the Alaska class ferry has rescue boats, and then it has rafts and slides, evacuation slides. So
just a question. So the elevator and turntable are in the stern or close to the stern?
Yes. If you see fairly close to the stern, you see those two uprights. Those are the supports for the elevator, and the elevator rides up on those. So, and that's necessary for the docks out in Southwest are fixed-height docks. So when you arrive, depending on what the tide is, the elevator has to match the height of that deck. Our docks down in Southeast have a floating dock, either a flexi-float or a synchro-lift that it basically adjusts with the tide, and then the ramp is from the fixed height of the terminal down to the float, which is at tide height. And there's only actually two of these in the world. We have them, the Kennecott and the Tustamina. So when the Tustamina was down, as you know, last year, the Kennecott is the only vessel that can take its place because it's the only ferry we have that also has an elevator. Unfortunately, because of its size, it can't get into some of the smaller docks and harbors. So.
Reverse my memory. How long was the Tustamina out of service?
It was out of service from November to September. It was planned to be out of service from November to the end of April. But by all accounts, it's in very good shape right now. So,
will the new one also be the Tustamina, or is there some opportunity to think about giving it a new name?
That hasn't been decided, but I assume there will be at least some overlap of the vessels. In which case, we would want a different name.
Got to have a different name. Okay.
Yeah.
So still, it's not too late to call it the Egan.
If there's a glacier named Egan, right now by statute, I believe it needs to be named after a glacier. But.
Okay, so first we've got to name a glacier, and then
no.
I defer to you on that, Senator.
Good answer.
Captain Falvey, are you still online?
Yes, Captain Falvey's online, Senator.
Yeah, hi. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think Ruben covered both topics extremely well. I really don't. We're proceeding along very well with both projects. We're very optimistic down here, Senator.
Great. Thank you very much, Captain Falvey, and good luck to you. And that was a very brief presentation, and things are, well, you know, it's end of session, and things are going crazy up here, so... You're smart not being here. Anyway, the commissioner and deputy commissioner did a fine job. And thanks, John, for being online. Further questions to come before the committee? Commissioner Kim, I want to thank you. And again, I apologize on behalf of the committee, but all of a sudden things are changing, and all of a sudden the immediate finance committee meeting two of our members away. So, Deputy Commissioner Yost, thank you for attending. And it's been brief. Now you can take the afternoon off.
I think I'll find something else.
Great. Thank you. Nothing else to come before the committee. We're adjourned.